Good morning, it's 8:35. Murray's Ken Winters is a lifelong educator and spent the last 8 years as a state senator. He's retiring. We'll speak with Senator Winters and we'll look at new horse racing technology ahead of this weekend's Kentucky Derby on Front Page AM from WKMS News. I'm Chad Lampe, and for Todd Hatton, thanks for joining us. You're listening to Front Page AM, bringing you the latest from around our four rivers each Friday morning at 8:35. You can hear more on Front Page PM this evening at 6:30, right after Marketplace, as well as our hour-long Front Page Sunday at 9 a.m. Coming up, a chat with 1st District State Senator Ken Winters. But first, the preparation of a horse for Triple Crown events like the Kentucky Derby is a demanding 365-day-a-year process. And the majority of people who do the work are foreign-born. Many workers on the track's backside say it's a job most Americans would avoid. From Public Broadcasting's Innovation Trail Project on Track Tech, Kentucky Public Radio's Devin Katayama reports on the people who do jobs just beyond the reach of modern technology.
It's just getting light, but several horses fall out of breath as they complete morning training at Churchill Downs. When they're finished, they'll be brought back here to the backside, where rows of horses are scrubbed, cleaned, and cooled off.
People who is out of the track don't know how we do, what is behind of the race.
This is Arturo Espinoza. He's a groom, which works under the trainer to clean and take care of the horses. He's been working in Louisville for a few years. Before that, he used a visa to go between the U.S. and his hometown, Mexico City.
The more difficult thing to me was and is separate from your parents. It's very sad.
It's estimated no less than 70% of the backside is foreign migrant workers. But a potential change to federal visa laws would make the process of hiring workers outside the country more arduous. The law would encourage trainers to give Americans first crack at employment. But these are jobs many Americans won't take.
They're basically forcing the U.S. employer to hire Americans.
Julio Rubio is a liaison for the National Horsemen Benevolent and Protective Association. Its members are owners and trainers, but it also oversees certain issues affecting backside workers.
We do above and beyond to try and hire Americans.
But the Department of Labor's new regulations will ask for more. They'll increase the minimum number of weekly working hours, but shorten the maximum number for temporary employment by a month. Further, trainers will have to spend more time trying to prove why foreign employees are needed. A lawsuit has held up implementation of the new policy. But while controls out of the backside could be tightening, inside the gates, it's a little looser.
It's like a microcosm of society.
This is Jennifer Hort. She's director of the Backside Learning Center, a nonprofit that provides education and life skills services to workers at Churchill Downs.
If you see violence in society, well, we see violence on the backside. If you see people that have gambling, drug, alcohol addictions out in society, they're back here too.
Many people call the backside its own community, so it's subject to need what all communities have: social services, recreational activities, and health care.
And depending on what the issue of the day was, they might come in here.
Whitney Nash is the director of the University of Louisville Nursing Center, which provides health care services to backside workers in Kentucky.
And I'm sure it's because of we're here at Churchill Downs, we're here in horse country. There's a big emphasis on trying to offer support and services. And I think, honestly, we do a really fairly comprehensive job.
Some say the industry is too fragmented, and because it's not nationally regulated, nonprofits in each state usually pick up the tabs for these services. But no state can fully protect backside workers from the side effects of the job.
You'll be lonely in the backside, and you by yourself.
This is Franklin Castillo from Panama. He acknowledges what many say is a result of being transient, as many workers follow the racing circuit throughout the year.
And you don't got your wife, or you got your girlfriend, or you got nobody. You as lonesome.
He says because most foreign-born workers send their money back home, every service provided helps. The Department of Labor is trying to draw more American workers to the backside, giving them their shot at the American dream. But for Arturo Espinoza, that dream is in another country. Espinoza isn't married, and he says he wants to one day make it back to Mexico City to be with his parents. But first, he says he wants to win one big race.
We are popular. Everybody wants to talk with you.
Now, are you talking about in the community, in the neighborhood,
yeah,
with the backside workers, or are you talking about out in...
Here, inside.
For Kentucky Public Radio, I'm Devin Katayama.
Track Tech is a collaboration between WEKU Radio, Louisville Public Media, and Public Broadcasting's Innovation Trail. First District State Senator Ken Winters finished his last regular session of his legislative career last month. Winters is a lifelong educator and has served as a dean of the College of Industry and Technology at Murray State and president of Campbellsville University. He spent 8 years in the Kentucky Senate, making significant headway in the Commonwealth's education policy, and he joins me today to talk about this past session and his legacy in the Kentucky legislature. So you've had a direct impact on 8 of 33 Senate bills that became law this session. Those bills you either sponsored or that went through the Senate Education Committee, which you chair.
Right.
So which bill are you most proud of that that you had an impact on this session?
One bill that comes to mind is, and it comes to mind because we spent roughly 2 years, the governor established this Transforming Education in Kentucky Task Force 2 years ago. And as a result of that, I served on that task force. And as a result of it, one of the recommendations involved trying to pull together the career and technical programs that, 54 or so of the schools are assigned to workforce development, not Kentucky Department of Education. And then about 16 of them are controlled or managed by local school districts. And those were separate, and even the curricula was not common in some of those programs. So as a result of that Transforming Education in Kentucky Task Force, there was a recommendation that they pull together another work group to look at career and technical ed. And we did that at several meetings, had several subgroups working on that, and we brought forth a recommendation that was organizationally a little different than Senator Westwood's bill on career pathways. But both of those came along during this session. And actually, one of the things we did do is the locally controlled school came to be locally controlled, but because the local officials in that particular district petitioned to have that school that was heretofore under the workforce development transferred to them. And that happened, well, at least there's 16 of them like that. But there wasn't the reciprocal opportunity for the schools to move from one. So we did get that component into the in budget language this time that would allow that to happen. But in a nutshell, the Career Pathways Bill takes into account that there are many people that may not want to go to college. There are many people that get frustrated, get disenfranchised, whatever, however you want to describe it. And this bill will try to capture them the minute we realize they're at risk. And we began to put career counselors with them and nurture them and try to keep them on track. And it happens to be my belief that that's the way you prevent dropouts.
You've spent 8 years in the Kentucky Senate. Can you hang your hat on one piece of legislation that you think will be your legacy in the Senate?
Well, I suspect probably be Senate Bill 1, but it was a bold step, and it related to how we assess young people at the end of each year and how we use that assessment in their accountability. And everyone was worried about how much time we spend in assessing and how early it was in the semester before graduation. And this one, It develops new core content for the areas that are a little narrower than the ones before, but are deeper, so that we build basic skills. And the other issue is we don't have much that the student is held responsible for in the old CATS testing system. We were evaluating schools, not students, and naturally the schools' rating will be based on how the students do, but there was virtually no way for us to track student-specific data at the student level and track them and going forward. And I made a comment to the state school board one time. I said, you know, you may not believe this, but as a university president, I've never admitted a high school to college. And some of them grinned because they knew where I was going, and the others, a few of them did not, because I'd gone a little bit beyond how they had thought about it. But I said, I know it's important for you to know how, and I use this example, how Pikeville High School and Paducah-Tillman High School compare. But at the university, it doesn't matter to me. I'm interested in how Johnny and Mary have progressed from the time they started in the school and as they come upward. If I'm going to put together a financial package to attract a young person, I need for them to have had some skin in the game as they moved along. So I'm proud of that bill, and I do believe that in the long haul it will make the difference in young people's lives.
Well, let's say that after January 1, you're completely out of the fray of politics. You don't really have to worry about partisanship, per se. Can you opine a bit on the future of stiff partisanship in our legislature, strictly between the House and the Senate, and how it's been very partisan over the last at least 8 years?
Yeah, and it seems to get a little more complex as we go along, too. I guess anytime you have strong personalities.
Do you think that the representative speaker of the House and the president of the Senate, when they speak, do you think they speak for the chamber, or do you think that they speak for their party within the chamber?
I'd say quite often the bulk of their speaking is related to their caucus within the chamber. Naturally, you know, that may change from time to time. In fairness to both leaders of the two chambers, I think they want to do what's right. And my mother always taught me two things for all my life. That, now, remember your words about all you have. Now, the quickest way to destroy a relationship between those two leaders is for one of them to renege on a statement. Because I have to know, if it's somebody on my committee, if you say this to me today, I expect it to be similar to what you tell me tomorrow. We have to be straightforward and upfront and consistent and honest in the way we deal with the issue. So I think both of them would like to do that kind of role, and maybe they will become a little easier next time.
So you've endorsed Trigg County Judge Executive Stan Humphreys to fill your seat in the Senate,
right,
and he'll face Carol Hubbard, who you faced last time that you ran. Are you confident that Stan Humphreys can win this race?
I am. Naturally, even if I'm running again, you know, you don't take anything for granted. It doesn't matter how much you think you're going to win by. You have to give it every ounce of your energy. And my first time 8 years ago, when I made a decision to do it in November, then I went at it aggressively from then up till, you know, and here comes the primary along, and I've been going at it just like I had a primary opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And some people got kind of offended when they went down to vote in the primary and found out I'm not even on there. But the issue is that Stan Humphreys is an outstanding fella. He's two-term judge executive over there, and you've seen him on the media as it relates to the bridge incident and mm-hmm. everything else. So he's on top of it. He's a farmer by background. A lot of people call me about him, and many of them will say, and I'll start, he's a two-term judge executive, and et cetera. And they say, but do you support him? That's the question I have. And I say, absolutely do. He's the kind of person that will represent us in a magnificent way. He probably wind up being on agriculture or on state and local government committee as his primary interest level when he gets there. But it's not what his specialty is and what his interests are. It's what kind of person is he? Can we trust him with the future of our Senate district? And that's where I feel he brings so much to the table.
Well, Senator Ken Winters, retiring State Senator Ken Winters, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I'm Chad Lampe. You've been listening to Front Page AM. Join Todd Hatton this evening at 6:30 for Front Page PM. We'll hear about budget planning in Murray with a $500,000 deficit and how a town eerily similar has a balanced budget this fiscal year. If you'd like to hear this morning's or any of our stories again, you can find them anytime at WKMS.org. You can also join us Sunday morning at 9 for the hour-long Front Page Sunday. Thanks for being with us. The Marketplace Morning Report is next.